Bliss by Catherine Mansfield. Published by Macmillan Education, a division of Macmillan Publishers Limited. Copyright Macmillan Publishers Limited, 2012. Part 3. Bang went the front door open and shut. Harry shouted, "Hello, you people! Down in 5 minutes!" And they heard him swarm up the stairs. Bertha couldn't help smiling. She knew how he loved doing things at high pressure. What, after all, did an extra 5 minutes matter? But he would pretend to himself that they mattered beyond measure. And then he would make a great point of coming into the drawing room extravagantly cool and collected. Harry had such a zest for life. Oh, how she appreciated it in him. And his passion for fighting, for seeking in everything that came up against him another test of his power and of his courage. That, too, she understood. Even when it made him just occasionally, to other people who didn't know him well, a little ridiculous, perhaps. For there were moments when he rushed into battle where no battle was. She talked and laughed and positively forgot until he had come in, just as she had imagined, that Pearl Fulton had not turned up. "I wonder if Miss Fulton has forgotten."
"I expect so," said Harry. "Is she on the phone?"
"Ah, there's a taxi now." And Bertha smiled with that little air of proprietorship that she always assumed while her women finds were new and mysterious. "She lives in taxis."
"She'll run to fat if she does," said Harry coolly,
ringing the bell for dinner.
"Frightful danger for blonde women."
"Harry, don't," warned Bertha, laughing up at him. Came another tiny moment while they waited, laughing and talking, just a trifle too much at their ease, a trifle too unaware. And then Miss Fulton, all in silver, with a silver fillet binding her pale blonde hair, came in smiling, her head a little on one side. "Am I late?"
"No, not at all," said Bertha. "Come along." And she took her arm and they moved into the dining room.
What was there in the touch of that cool arm that could fan, start blazing, the fire of bliss that Bertha did not know what to do with? Miss Fulton did not look at her, but then she seldom did look at people directly. Her heavy eyelids lay upon her eyes, and the strange half-smile came and went upon her lips, as though she lived by listening rather than seeing. But Bertha knew, suddenly, as if the longest, most intimate look had passed between them, as if they had said to each other, "You too," that Pearl Fulton, stirring the beautiful red soup in the grey plate, was feeling just what she was feeling. And the others? Face and mug, Eddie and Harry, their spoons rising and falling, dabbing their lips with their napkins, crumbling bread, fiddling with the forks and glasses and talking.
"I met her at the Alpha show, the weirdest little person. She'd not only cut off her hair, but she seemed to have taken a dreadfully good slip off her legs and arms and her neck and her poor little nose as well."
"Isn't she very lié with Michael Oat?"
"The man who wrote Love in False Teeth."
"He wants to write a play for me. One act, one man, decides to commit suicide. Gives all the reasons why he should and why he shouldn't. And just as he has made up his mind either to do it or not to do it, curtain. Not half a bad idea."
"What's he going to call it? Stomach trouble?"
"I think I've come across the same idea in a little French review quite unknown in England."
No, they didn't share it. They were dears, and she loved having them there at her table and giving them delicious food and wine. In fact, she longed to tell them how delightful they were and what a decorative group they made, how they seemed to set one another off, and how they reminded her of a play by Chekhov.
Harry was enjoying his dinner. It was part of his, well, not his nature exactly, and certainly not his pose, his something or other, to talk about food and to glory in his shameless passion for the white flesh of the lobster and the green of pistachio ices, green and cold like the eyelids of Egyptian dancers. When he looked up at her and said, "Bertha, this is a very admirable souffle," and she almost could have wept with childlike pleasure. Oh, why did she feel so tender towards the whole world tonight? Everything was good, was right. All that happened seemed to fill again her brimming cup of bliss. And still, in the back of her mind, there was the pear tree. It would be silver now, in the light of poor dear Eddie's moon, silver as Miss Fulton, who sat there turning a tangerine in her slender fingers that were so pale a light seemed to come from them. What she simply couldn't make out, what was miraculous, was how she should have guessed Miss Fulton's mood so exactly and so instantly. For she never doubted for a moment that she was right, and yet what had she to go on? Less than nothing. "I believe this does happen very, very rarely between women, never between men," thought Bertha. "But while I am making the coffee in the drawing room, perhaps she will give a sign." What she meant by that she did not know, and what would happen after that she could not imagine. While she thought like this, she saw herself talking and laughing. She had to talk because of her desire to laugh. "I must laugh or die." But when she noticed Face's funny little habit of tucking something down the front of her bodice, as if she kept a tiny secret hoard of nuts there too, Bertha had to dig her nails into her hands so as not to laugh too much. It was over at last, and, "Come and see my new coffee machine," said Bertha.
"We only have a new coffee machine once a fortnight," said Harry.
Face took her arm this time. Miss Fulton bent her head and followed after. The fire had died down in the drawing room to a red, flickering nest of baby phoenixes, said Face.
"Don't turn up the light for a moment. It is so lovely."
And down she crouched by the fire again. She was always cold. Without her little red flannel jacket, of course, thought Bertha. At that moment, Miss Fulton gave the sign. "Have you a garden?" said the cool, sleepy voice. This was so exquisite on her part that all Bertha could do was to obey. She crossed the room, pulled the curtains apart and opened those long windows. "There," she breathed. And the two women stood side by side looking at the slender, flowering tree. Although it was so still, it seemed, like the flame of a candle, to stretch up, to point, to quiver in the bright air, to grow taller as they gazed, almost to touch the rim of the round silver moon. How long did they stand there? Both, as it were, caught in that circle of unearthly light, understanding each other perfectly, creatures of another world, and wondering what they were to do in this one with all this blissful treasure that burned in their bosoms and dropped in silver flowers from their hair and hands. Forever? For a moment? And did Miss Fulton murmur, "Yes"? Just that? Or did Bertha dream it?